This episode of Marketing Group Therapy is brought to you by Restore One. They're currently building the Anchor House, a safe home that provides refuge and restoration to boys ages 12 to 18 who have been victims of human trafficking. This is the first long-term recovery safe home within the United States designated solely for male victims. Learn more about how you can help with the construction of this home and spread the word at restoreonelife.org. One of the things that has unfortunately fallen into the category of buzzwords is content marketing. If you think content marketing is something that's going to turn around your business this week or put you on the front page of Google by the end of the month, let's just say you need to reset your expectations. If you think it's something you can ignore, you may as well pack up and shut the doors. You see, to stand out in this increasingly cluttered internet world of ours, you need to have a voice and position it in a way that your customers or clients or potential employers can hear it. Welcome to Season 2 of Marketing Group Therapy, Episode 23. You'll find more about today's topics in the show notes at bjsmith.co/23. I love going to conferences and events. Getting together with other marketers like me in the halls and at after-hours events was always my favorite part. We were free to be ourselves and share stories. I would come away with ideas and inspiration while feeling better about what I was doing in my business. This time with my friends helped me realize that others face similar challenges, that I wasn't alone, and we could break through the barriers by putting our heads together. This show is a reflection of those experiences where we get together right here and share our stories. I'm your host, e-commerce marketing coach, BJ Smith. Today we have Brian Honigman from Honigman Media joining us on the group. His company is a content marketing consultancy that provides strategy on content creation and content distribution. You can find his articles over at the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, World Economic Forum, and others. Brian's also a speaker on the topic, helping his audience create actionable strategies for more effective content marketing and social media. And for those of us who are Twitter chat fans, you can hang out with Brian each month on his Insider Chat. So it's hashtag Insider Chat. Brian, pull up a chair, make yourself comfortable. Welcome to the Marketing Group Therapy session.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I mentioned your Insider Chat on Twitter. You had some great guests yesterday. I saw Kim Garst and a few others who were some names that I recognized. So what was their topic on yesterday?
Yeah, sure. So Insider Chat is the last Wednesday of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the last one, which was yesterday, was focused on social selling for small businesses. And we had Jason Miller from LinkedIn as a guest. We had Kim Garst, who's like a big from Social Boom, the conference, and she's like a social media consultant. I had Vivica Von Rosen, who's a LinkedIn expert, kind of the LinkedIn consultant. And then I had Barbara Giammanco. I hope I'm saying her last name right. She's a sales consultant as well. So I try to each week bring on interesting guests that are kind of subject matter experts on that particular topic, and we just kind of have a great conversation.
Let's talk a little bit more about your history. So what is your background, and how'd you get started in content marketing?
Sure. So basically, I'm a marketer through and through. I started off at a couple different startups, helping them in the really early stage, from going from 2 people to 10 people. From there, I worked for 2 years at a digital marketing agency in Pittsburgh, really diving into SEO and then finding that I really love social media as well. And from that marriage, I really kind of started to get into content marketing, since content can really help businesses both fuel their SEO and social media efforts. Once I moved on from Pittsburgh, I came here to New York, where I am currently, and started working at Mark Echo Enterprises, which is most familiar with for their fashion brand Echo Unlimited, the Rhino sweatshirts, huge in the 90s, not as much anymore, unfortunately, but they have many other brands, Complex Magazine and a couple other fashion brands under their umbrella. And I, at the time, managed their social media and SEO efforts on behalf of those different brands. And then for the last 2 years or so, I've been doing my own thing with Honeybin Media, consulting and helping businesses figure this all this stuff out, which is quite confusing at times for, you know, people that aren't focused on marketing 24/7.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. So, all right, so it is quite confusing. And a lot of folks, you know, when they hear about content marketing, you know, I think there's so much confusion out there. Kind of tell us a little bit about some of the misconceptions that people have about content marketing. And let's talk a little bit about, give some advice about some of the right strategies to take on.
So I think most businesses understand today that social media and content marketing are avenues that work to get their message out there, right? But now the problem is how to actually do it the right way, how to be great when you're taking the time to invest in content and social. I think some of the biggest misconceptions is that if you put out a blog post or you put out a piece of content or that you just start tweeting, that you'll see immediate results. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of businesses get discouraged quite quickly, or they'll do a blog for 2 months and then stop because it didn't drive $1 million in sales.
It's time consuming and they don't see the returns.
Yeah. And I think that kind of has to do with our culture where we just expect results now. We can text now. We can go buy something on Amazon immediately. And like some businesses just expect immediate results when in actuality, a lot of these kind of content marketing and social media channels are a long-term investment without a doubt. So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is thinking that just by doing it for a short period of time that you'll see immediate results. There has to be a strategy in place, which many businesses forget to take on, and really sitting down, writing down, and mapping out, you know, the different steps they're going to take to best approach content or, you know, being active on a certain social media channel. And having that plan in place is so important because it helps kind of keep you focused on what your goals are and keeps you focus on which tracks are working, and then when you identify something that isn't working, you can kind of be agile and switch and change tactics. And unfortunately, a lot of businesses just dive in headfirst without really taking the time to build that plan out. I think another thing is, you know, kind of tied with just immediately doing content or social without really having a plan is a lot of businesses I've seen will create content and just put it out there. They'll just publish it on their site and then nothing happens. Or they'll tweet from their own, you know, company Twitter account and then nothing happens because they're just putting messaging out there.
You know, that reminds me of the days when I first got back in, when I first started in web design. It was in the late 90s. And I think I started with an agency where we were creating sites for other people around the year 2000. And there were these FedEx commercials out there. FedEx or UPS, one of the two. Mm-hmm. And it showed this company, which was a novel idea back at the time, who was creating their first, website. And it showed them, okay, we're going live now. And then it showed the little order number and it popped up and went a bing. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, everybody's cheering. And then it went bing, bing. And they're like, uh-oh. And then bing, 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 bing. And all these orders start flying in. And they're going nuts. They're like, oh my God, how are we going to ship? You know, so that's the whole point is, you know, yeah, well, look, you know, FedEx, UPS, whatever it was, we'll take care of your shipping. But the problem was people believed that. They thought that if they put that website up there, that,
oh, no,
you know, it's like the Field of Dreams, you know,
yeah,
build it and they will come. And that's not the case. And I think a lot of content marketing is the same way.
Absolutely. It's, you know, I'm all about trying things and failing fast and putting yourself out there. But, you have to have a plan in action. And then also the other side that a lot of people are missing and expecting that just, you know, if you build it, they'll come, is that you have to understand how to distribute that content, how to distribute your messaging as well. So it's should be a balanced approach. So for example, a lot of the back to the example I had earlier of like someone blogging or some company blogging for 2 months and then saying nothing happened. If you just publish a blog post and then tweet it on your company account, it's likely nothing's going to happen, right? Whereas you should split your time, I would say, you know, 60-40 in the beginning and then eventually phase it down to 50-50 on more on distribution in the beginning and then on the content creation side. So eventually it'll even out and you're splitting about half the time. But there's all these like preconceived notions that you should be blogging this many times or tweeting this many times or what have you. Whereas instead of worrying about I need to be blogging 3 times a week, how about you blog once a week? And then the time that you were going to take to produce those other 2 blogs that week, spend on promoting the first blog post, just as an example of one form of content. So really keeping in mind how you're actually going to distribute what you're actually creating. And that should start in the beginning. So you're sitting down with your team, you're going to create this in-depth white paper to promote on the web, you're going to give it to your sales team. Before you even create it, in what ways are you going to promote it? How is your sales team going to use it? How is it going to be pushed out there so that you are able to drive results from your efforts? So I think those are some of the biggest issues I've seen. And that's where a lot of my projects come in, is helping businesses understand how to best plan for content marketing, integrating it into their company, and understanding all the different elements that goes into it, balancing both the creation side and then also the distribution side.
So I know a lot of people will tell you that the ways that you need to start building that audience, because really you have to, you know, if you're creating the content, you know, the promotion part of it is you've got to build an audience and not just, you know, hey, one time, you know, see this piece of content, but you want people to subscribe in one way or another, whether it's subscribing to your blog, subscribing to your Twitter, Facebook, subscribing to an RSS feed, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Email, big one.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got to build. I'm curious what your thoughts are about, you know, owned versus rented space. Like Medium is a big one. I know Gary Vaynerchuk's one who's really hot on using Medium. Mm-hmm. I've been using it here recently and I find it quite interesting. What is your thought of posting these articles on something like Medium versus posting it on your own website blog?
Great question. I agree. I think Medium is a great platform. It's super interesting, this kind of blog with its own, you know, built-in distribution network. It's pretty uncommon. My suggestion is to take a mixed approach. So instead of solely publishing original content on these own platforms, I would republish content from your own site that you own that lives on your properties. Okay. I would republish it on places like Medium and LinkedIn and what have you, if it makes sense for your audience.
Right.
But then I would also occasionally do some original stuff, original content production for those channels. But at the end of the day, you should always be creating the most original content for your own properties. Because if Medium as a business shut down tomorrow, you lose all that content.
It's done.
It's done. And that was a lot of effort. And I really do think that these channels, like Medium and LinkedIn and, you know, other publishing platforms, can really give you added distribution and get you in front of a new audience and give your content, you know, more legs online, without a doubt. But you don't want to put all your eggs in a basket that you don't have full control over. So my suggestion is always to have a mixed approach, publishing content from that you've already produced on your own sites, publishing the occasional original content, curating some content, and just ensuring it's like a healthy balance.
You mentioned that in some of your past work that you did SEO work. Being in the web design field for as long as I have been, and you know, obviously SEO is something that's come across my desk, you know, many, many times. And duplicate content is one of the things that people talk about, you know, having the same content, the same information in one place and then showing it again in another. It's not that you're going to get penalized for it, but you'll actually just not get credit for it in one of those places.
Right.
And I know one of the features that Medium has, and I see some people doing this on LinkedIn as well, is that you can actually create your article and then you can download a copy of it to publish somewhere else. Is it a bad idea to write an article for Medium or LinkedIn and republish it the exact same way on your own blog? Or would you go the other way around, publish it on your own blog and then wait a little while for it to get indexed and then publish it on Medium and LinkedIn?
Another great question. I would say that you, for the most part, should be publishing first on your properties and then republishing on those. And again, a mix. But I would say for the most part, you should be publishing first on your own properties and then republishing on a Medium or a LinkedIn. And in terms of kind of like the duplicate content issues, there's a kind of a few ways that you can alert Google to let them know that this is you republishing it a second time with permission. And they're okay with that. Publications have been doing syndication for years and years and years. And as long as you add the right signals to your pieces, then you should be covered. So for instance, the whole point of duplicate content is so that, you know, someone doesn't steal your content and, you know, just copy and paste it onto their own blog and claiming it as their own, right?
Get credit, right? Get the ranking higher for you
and, you know, you did all the work, right? So it's kind of a protection. But if you're republishing it yourself for added benefit, then there's no problem. So a couple things you can do. So one thing is to ensure that you're linking at some point in the article, the republished article, saying that it was published elsewhere previously. So at the whenever I'm republishing something, either at the bottom or the top of the article, I will say, this post or this article or this blog post originally appeared on brianhine.com, or this article originally appeared on entrepreneur.com, or, you know, where, what was the original source? And then I link to it so that Google is very smart and the search engines are very smart. And that indication alone helps a majority of content be cleared and understood that, okay, this isn't the original piece and it's been published with permission. They really care about, they'll hurt you if it's published without permission. In certain cases, when republishing, there is a canonical tag that you can add to a piece of content to further, a step further, let Google know, hey, this isn't the original piece. Please ignore it in the search engines. So it'll definitely fall far lower than the original piece.
Right.
And this has been republished with permission. So that's a little bit more difficult in the sense that
you have to have code access.
You have to have code. So I don't think that that's not really a possibility on a LinkedIn or a Medium. I publish some of my content on Entrepreneur magazine, and working with the editor there, they make sure to put that in the background because they, you know, they want to be 100%, you know, safe and secure and make sure everything's all good. But it's just an added perk if you can do it. If you are working with a publisher or a platform that has the ability, that's great. But for the most part, making it very clear that in the article that it's not the original and you should be good to go.
Do you think that sources like Medium and LinkedIn would actually penalize you if you put that in there and they realize that the piece that you gave them was not original content? I know that Medium is, a lot of their stuff is kind of handpicked and looked over. And I'm wondering if somebody is an editor looking at this stuff and they say, well, this article originally appeared on, you know.
Right. We'd rather publish original pieces, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or highlight original pieces. I don't know what the answer is. I would say yes and no. Yeah. So on LinkedIn, I've had some of my most successful pieces on my LinkedIn profile were republished there. I've noticed that, you know, sometimes certain articles on LinkedIn get featured in categories by editors, and I personally haven't noticed a difference between publishing both original content and republished content on LinkedIn for getting it featured or not. Sometimes an original piece won't get featured in a category. Sometimes it will. Sometimes a republished piece will get featured, and other times it won't. So they don't seem, in my experience, to have, you know, the same kind of preferences. I think at the end of the day, they'd all want to feature original content.
They want good quality content, no matter.
Exactly. Yeah. No matter the source. But I think you're right. I mean, I see a majority of the content that is featured on Medium. It doesn't necessarily say it's been republished elsewhere. So I don't think that they wouldn't feature it if it was a good piece of content, but I think they're more likely to want original stuff to their platform. So it's pretty nuanced. I'm not sure if there is one right answer for that, but.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit about repurposing content, republishing content, you know, for different sources. And of course, mm-hmm. you'd want to modify it to fit the audience, obviously.
Sure.
But what about repurposing content? So taking a piece of content, whether it's an article, blog post, video or something like that, taking that and using that content in other ways.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main things I often recommend to my clients, especially when they're strapped for, you know, time, budget, talent, resources, And you really want to get out there with content marketing because, you know, some part of it is a quantity play, more so quality, but definitely quantity. You want to be regularly reaching your audience. But you may not have the resources to produce, you know, whatever form of content ever, you know, weekly or month, what have you. So what I try to help clients do is focus on creating a content hub that they can pull from. So in many cases, especially in B2B, setting up a blog and using that as your content hub works. Or in other cases, if you're using video, or in other cases, if you're using white papers, really investing in a few forms, let's say, you know, 1 to 3 forms of content. And then from those pieces, creating other forms of content and smaller types of content from it. So as a little more clear, specific example, if you're investing once a month in creating this in-depth white paper, maybe after it's published, you pull a section from it, you add an intro, you add another angle to it, and you write a blog post pulling from the information that you've already spent the time, money, and talent on covering into a blog post to further promote that idea, further promote that larger piece of content. Maybe you create a slide share that's a visual summary of the different sections that you've included in that white paper. And that way, you aren't reinventing the wheel every time you're producing a piece of content. You're focusing a lot of effort and quality on one piece that's lengthy, you know, right, infographic, video, what have you, and then spinning out those same concepts into, you know, other forms, whether that's social, you know, you created 10 tweets based off of the information and or statistics or what have you that you covered in that white paper. So that's something that I always recommend doing. I think it's a great tactic. It's great that you brought it up. I think most businesses can benefit from it. And many businesses are doing it without even realizing. By using social media, you're driving traffic to larger pieces of content in many cases. And that's a form of repurposing. On my blog, every article I produce, and I've only been doing this for a few weeks now, but every article that I'm producing, I'm also creating a slide share that is kind of like a visual summary to each blog post, just to add a different angle to it. And, you know, it's obviously still takes work to produce more content, but I'm not reinventing the wheel. I'm just kind of following my article as an outline, creating a visual format to it. And in some cases, they get 20,000 views on a slide share through their channel that I wouldn't have, you know, maybe gotten on the blog article itself. So it's like a great way to, you know, just drive more visibility and get more traction for the efforts you're focusing on content.
Very cool. Brian, I want to let you know that one of our friends, Ivana, just joined us on Periscope. So I saw her. Hello.
Hello. Awesome.
Okay. So let me, here you go. Multitasking. I'm not good at it. I wanted to let you know one of the things that I'm trying out, because I have the gear, you know, I'm doing the podcast already. I'm doing the recording. One of the things I've been doing is when I write an article, then I'll come back up here. I'll read the article, record the article, and I'll throw in a little bit of extra something here or there. And also, you know, maybe do a little promotional stuff, you know, talk about podcasts or something like that, right at the very end, kind of a credits type thing.
Yeah.
And I'll publish that to SoundCloud.
Absolutely.
And then I can, you know, so I get the SoundCloud audience. Thanks. Ivana says it's a good idea. So I'll publish that to SoundCloud. I get the SoundCloud audience. I also embed that on the Medium, and I will also, you know, put that up on, I'm actually considering creating a third podcast. It's just kind of a, you know, more of a written thing like that. So it gives me a way to easily repurpose that content. Somebody just asked a question and it went by on Periscope so fast I couldn't see it. So if you could ask that again, please do a slide share. So Ivana's saying you can do the slide share. Can you do slide share? Can you do audio and slide share?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I know you can do video. So I know you can upload, you know, the kind of the presentation, which is the bread and butter of SlideShare. You can upload infographics. You can upload a PDF. I know you can upload videos now that they're integrated with LinkedIn.
Right.
You can upload content there. I'm not sure if you can add audio or not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's such a visual medium. unless it's a really short piece of audio. I mean, I wouldn't sit there and read a 3-minute piece because it's a, you know, it's meant to be a visual medium. So I wouldn't do that. And somebody was asking how they can hear both of us. So that's just my equipment. I've got a mixer that's the same way that I record both Brian and me talking at the same time. And it's got a USB out and the USB goes back up into my phone through my camera kit. So that's how you get to hear both of us. Unfortunately, you can only see me, but yeah. So most of the time they're hearing you talk and giving this great advice and they're just sitting there watching me nod my head. All right. A lot of us kind of have a hard time following our own advice. You've heard the saying that, you know, the cobbler's kids have no shoes. And I think that's true for so many people who specialize in certain areas, like the landscape guy who's got the worst yard in the neighborhood, or the website designer who has the worst website. So obviously you're publishing on a lot of different platforms. So how do you use content marketing to build your business?
You're really knocking out the great questions today. So I think that's really important. Honestly, I think that's how you can stand out as a business, is if you actually follow the advice that you're giving. You're eating the dog food. I think it's totally one of the ways I've been able to stand out throughout my career. And I think honestly, my whole career has been kind of supported by content marketing. I got my job at MarkEcho Enterprises from writing about them in a publication discussing, you know, what they're doing with Facebook, and that built a relationship with, you know, key people there, and eventually I was hired. So I've been using content throughout my entire career, and to date, by writing regularly for different publications in the space, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Entrepreneur, Next Web, etc., I'm regularly reaching marketers and business owners with the strategies that they need to use if they want to, you know, find success with social media, SEO, and content marketing. And I think that's been a huge differentiator, in the sense that there's a lot of swindlers out there in the marketing space.
To use
a polite word. There's so many gurus and ninjas and social media experts and all that stuff. But then you go and look at what they're actually doing themselves, and they have, you know, they're not using these platforms and channels to really articulate anything of interest. And it's kind of just counterintuitive. I don't understand why you would go with someone that isn't actually using social media themselves. I often hire employees for some of my clients to help with their, you know, content, social needs. And you'd be so surprised how many people that are in social media, are in content marketing, don't actually do it themselves at all. So I understand that you're doing it, a lot of your time is spent doing it for your clients or the business that you're employed by, but you got to do it for yourself. You got to add to the discourse that, you know, standing out is not an option anymore. It's, you know, required if you want to, you know, really land the opportunities and the clients that, you know, you're really interested in reaching.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, it's just been regularly writing, doing podcast interviews like these, and just talking about this, putting my ideas out there on a consistent basis, where the audience I'm trying to reach, my potential customers, are most active, which is on social media, which is when they're searching for content about marketing related topics, and when they're reading these publications about, you know, marketing and business.
Right. You know, when you were talking about the gurus and the ninjas out there.
Yeah.
One of my pet peeves, I follow a lot of people on Twitter. So I look for people that may be interesting or have similar interests, and I'll follow them and, you know, try to strike up a conversation. And I hate it when I get these automatic messages back to me.
Oh, the DMs?
Oh, yeah. Well, both tweets and DMs. So, you know, at replies and DMs.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of the things that, like, the other day, it was a great story, just lined up with what you were talking about. Somebody sends me an auto DM, and it says, hey, if you want to know about marketing online or something like that, you know, send me a message or you know, DM me or something like that. And I'm like, well, one, you obviously didn't go look at my profile. You would have seen some of this information, right? You would have known that I do marketing myself, and that, you know, so this is kind of my space. You don't really need to offer me advice. The other thing is it asked me to DM them. But when I went to go reply and say, hey, you know, because sometimes I'll be nice about it. Sometimes I'll get a little snotty. I'm like, you know, stop with the auto reply stuff, but auto DM stuff. But I go to reply to them and guess what? They're not following me.
Yeah.
But you need to, it's one of those things that if you know Twitter, if you're a social media expert, then you need to know that you have to follow somebody for them to be able to reply to you. And, you know, and then I go look at their profile and they have like, you know, 200 followers, which isn't, there's nothing wrong with having 200 followers. But if you're a social media expert, I expect a little bit more than that, you know?
Sure. And for me, I don't really care about audience size. What I care about is that you're actually using these platforms in a helpful way. You're actually engaging with people. You're actually doing the things that you're instructing your clients to do. You have to use, and also from a kind of an, you know, research and development perspective, you have to be using these platforms in order to understand how different audiences use them, what feature sets are important to utilize to reach people, how, what types of content resonate on here. I know some true social media experts like Gary Vaynerchuk or Kim Garst, who I had on my Twitter chat yesterday, they are using these channels as soon as they come out and just diving in and like understanding, so how does Snapchat work? How are people, I need to start using it. Why is Instagram, you know, good for X, Y, and Z? I need to use it myself on a regular basis to understand what works and what doesn't. And I'm not saying to be a marketer, you need to be active on every channel, but what I'm saying is if you have a core focus, you really need to understand how to use these platforms regularly.
Yeah.
I have that same issue with similar to the DM, you know, the automated direct messages on Twitter, on LinkedIn. And it's pretty frustrating. Talk about the opposite of social selling. So someone will connect with me, and that's fine. I mean, I prefer if someone wrote a little message to clarify, you know, why we should connect. You know, I'm all about just connecting with
good people.
Yeah, take a second and say, hey, I like social media too. I'd love to brainstorm with you sometime. Whatever. I don't have to know you personally to connect with you on LinkedIn. I love just connecting with good people. And I've connected with so many people recently that immediately, straight off the gate, they'll connect with you and send you a message and a whole pitch.
Yeah.
I'd love to get on a call soon about marketing or whatever it is. And like, they don't know anything about me. It's a pre-written message. And that is the opposite of what, you know, a marketer should do, an expert should do. It's just terrible.
Yeah. I have a very hard time with LinkedIn. And I will be honest, that's probably my least favorite social media. That is, as far as the ones that I actually participate in, to some extent, that is my least favorite. And it's for that reason. It's for the immediate sales pitches. The groups, to me, unless you have a very specific private group, the groups are completely useless because people are just in there selling their stuff. You know, they're, and it's been a while since I really paid attention to it, but it used to be a place for, hey, I just wrote a blog and I'm going to link dump on this group and, you know, all these other groups that I belong to. And it just drives me insane. You know, where's the conversation? They need the communication.
Totally. I actually love LinkedIn. It's one of my favorite of the social media channels that I'm active on. One of my favorites in terms of the value I get from it.
And sell me on it.
The value I'm able to provide to others, since it's the context is purely business and professional. But for that same reason, I think that's why there's so many people kind of ruining it for the rest of us. And they just go on there and they say, oh, this is a tool for selling. This is a tool that people will buy my products on. Let me just blast it out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of those loud voices that are trying to break through on LinkedIn. It does kind of muddy the value there. But I just find it really, I find it personally so valuable is that I can stand out on LinkedIn more easily than I would on a Facebook or Twitter.
Okay.
For my business, in the sense that I found that many people don't regularly post content on their LinkedIn profile. They'll set one up and just let it sit. I found that many people don't use all the different feature sets on LinkedIn, like adding visuals to their profile, really building them out to be this kind of really expansive look at your career, not just this boring resume, but like all the different points across your career, which LinkedIn really gives you the opportunity to do. And then lastly, kind of using LinkedIn as almost a CRM in some capacity, you're able to leave notes on people's profiles, right, which I've found really beneficial because I'm meeting a lot of people all the time because I just like connecting with smart people. And then also I use it from a business perspective. So I'm connecting with my clients and I'll just write little notes on their profile that pop up on my phone when I look at their profile before a meeting. Or if they send me an email for some reason, you know, since I'm far from perfect, I don't remember who it is, I can go to their profile and use it as kind of like a resource for me. So for those three reasons, I found it quite useful. I find my LinkedIn content that I'm publishing regularly gets a lot more engagement, and a lot of people in my network will say, hey, yeah, I always see your stuff on LinkedIn and it's great. And I'm like, well, thank you so much. That means a lot. But it also means that so few of their other contacts are actually publishing regularly.
Right.
Which is interesting. That's true. And definitely really focused on that. And, you know, I use Buffer to help automate. I put all the content in there by hand and all the good stuff, but I use Buffer to help kind of on the publishing side of that thing to help automate some of that. So,
okay. So you mentioned how you like connecting with other people. Let's talk a little bit about networking and how that plays into providing value.
Sure. Going back to content marketing, I often use content to continually engage friends, you know, professional contacts, clients, people that I would like to network with. And it's just another medium where I can provide them value. So for instance, if I'm trying to connect with this other marketer who is quote unquote more successful or less successful, whatever, that's great marketing voice, I can introduce them a client. I can ask them to be on insider chat, which is kind of a form of content marketing. I can kind of quote them in an article. Right. If they are an expert on, let's say, Twitter, and I'm writing a Twitter piece. And I found that if you're reaching out to someone and you're just saying, hey, I want to pick your brain or get coffee, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. But depending on how busy that person is, that doesn't really stand out. That doesn't really highlight quite quickly how they're going to get anything out of it. And I'm not right. saying all people, you know, when they first read a message, they're thinking, how do I get something out of it? But when you're busy, you need to understand which opportunities to say yes to and which opportunities to say no to, right?
Very good, yeah.
So for me, especially when it's someone new and doesn't have a full context of who I am and how I would be able to help them, I have to provide that context very quickly as to who I am, what I do, how I'd like to involve you, and what value I'm driving to you quickly. So instead of saying, hey, Sue, can I go out to coffee with you? I said, hey, Sue, love to connect sometime. Let's get on a Skype interview, and I'd love to include your thoughts in this Forbes piece that I'm writing, right?
Right, yeah.
So that it's a much stronger reason for them to reply and to stay in contact with me, because they'll get visibility from our relationship as well, and hopefully, you know, added value from us keeping in touch and continuing to talk in the future. I wrote an article about this. If you just Google using content marketing to network or networking. Oh, it's networking with content marketing.
Okay.
And I put a couple different examples in there, but I use interviews to, you know, stay in touch with my network, roundup posts. So those are like, you know, what are the best tips for selling on Twitter? And I would, you know, get a couple quotes from, you know, 10 experts to add into that piece. And then also, just quoting people outside of a more in-depth interview has also been a great piece, whether you're actually reaching out to them or to get that quote, or you're just pulling it from something they already published and, right. and adding it to like your discussion on a topic. I found that to be quite useful. But yeah, I think networking is so important and so many people hate it.
Why? I love it. I love just meeting new people. And I mean, again, like the whole point of this show is that, you know, marketing people getting together and talking and chatting and sharing stories and advice and inspiration and all that. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you have an opportunity to learn from other smart people. I think that's wonderful. And obviously you have something to offer them as well, regardless. You know, I hate it to kind of say like there's some people ahead of you in your career, behind you. And in some cases that's true, you know, but there's always value to get up or down, or, you know, a peer level person in your kind of career path. And I think people get discouraged by that, or like look down at people that haven't had much success, or they're too afraid to reach out to people that have had success. And I don't think that should be the case. I think you should, you know, want to surround yourself with smart people, help others that, you know, want to get to where level that you're at or do the types of things that you've been able to do in your career, and just like a big reciprocal circle where everyone's constantly learning and getting value. And that's exciting to me.
Before we get into our next segment, I want to tell you about an upcoming webinar I'm calling The 3 Keys to Blowing Away Last Year's Sales. It's built around my 3 pillars of e-commerce marketing: leadership, education, and networking. We'll all talk about why every e-commerce company needs a dedicated marketing leader and how to find that person, the importance of continuing education because there's something new every day and it's difficult to keep up, and finally, how to surround yourself with a supportive network, like Brian mentioned earlier. To get notified about when this free webinar will launch, sign up at bjsmith.co/webinar. Okay, Brian, I want to make sure that you're comfortable in your chair over there because we're going to take a little bit deeper dive into the group therapy. You ready?
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So, you know, with any business, you have to take the good with the bad. And I believe that a lot of the successes are results from lessons that we've learned from trial and error. So I want to talk about a time when things didn't work out quite as planned, you know, what you learned from it and what that can do to help some of the others avoid similar situation.
So a time that didn't work out for me as I would liked it to is when you lose a client, when you have a bad interaction with the client, unfortunately, when you lose business. And it's bound to happen, especially in consulting. You know, some of the cons of consulting, I think, are even if you give them the best advice in the world and really try to help a business, sometimes they're not going to follow your advice either way, even though they're paying you. And that can be really frustrating, unfortunately. Just one con, but there's more pros than cons in my opinion.
Right.
Anyway, so when you're deciding on what clients to bring on or not bring on, or what customer or types of customers to bring on or not bring on, you have to really have kind of like a criteria set up of like, what type of people do you want to work with? What type of business people, business category should they fall under? What type of goals are they looking for? Budget, personality types. You know, one of the reasons I started my business is that one of many is that I just don't want to work with bad, unmotivated people. I want to work with both clients and partners and people like yourself that add value to me and vice versa, and that I'm excited to work with. I don't want to work with a terrible client that I have to keep selling myself to throughout the duration of the project. I want to work with an equal partner who's excited and vice versa. And one thing in terms of kind of creating criteria for what a good client is for you and what a bad client is, during my time as a consultant for Hyman Media, I lost a $70,000 project 3 months in to the project because of communication issues. And one of the things that I was most frustrated at was that the CEO of this company didn't use a computer themselves, and they were the key decision maker. Oh. So they would communicate with me through another person who would write their emails for them or meet with me and then communicate it back. I would share reports that they had to be printed out. They would have to print out my emails for, you know, this CEO to read, and it made communication far more difficult than it needed to be. And honestly, I'll definitely, you know, take the fault for not communicating effectively in this, you know, very specific circumstance. And they just got frustrated because they didn't understand what was happening. And I thought I was making it quite clear across the whole process. So obviously there was a communication issue, right? And one thing I learned in that case was to never, you know, work with a company where the decision maker isn't using the internet or a computer themselves and can't look at something, you know, answer an email. Or it's okay if you're at a point in your career where other people are helping you with email. I totally get it. But if you're unable to go on the computer and check something, like, that's just going to, you know, be a huge roadblock for our success partnering together.
Yeah.
So what I was at fault at not doing in the beginning there was not being thorough enough in my initial research and meeting with the client and figuring out their needs and stuff, because I didn't realize till after the fact that this, you know, the CEO wasn't actually using the web themselves. They were actually having someone else write their emails under their, and I should have done more thorough research to really understand kind of what was happening there. And if I would have known that going in, maybe I wouldn't have said yes, I'm moving forward with the project, and maybe I wouldn't have, you know, had an issue.
Well, you know, anytime we deal with situations like this, it gives us another question to ask. You know, when I first approached my business coach, he's like, look, you know, we're going to have a talk because I don't work with everybody. And I need to make sure that we like each other, that we're going to be able to get along, and everybody's going to be enthusiastic, just like you're saying. And so, you know, we had this, you know, 45 minute hour long conversation before we even started doing business together, that, you know, to make sure that the two of us were going to like each other and work with each other, because, you know, if we don't know the questions to ask, then it's just going to be a strained relationship. And, you know, like you experience, it's just not going to work out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And unfortunately, we have to learn those lessons. You know, we have to learn those questions to ask. And yeah, a lot of times it's by losing a $70,000 client.
Yeah, it definitely hurt at the time. But I think what's really important is to learn from, you know, any issues or failures or mistakes that you make. You know, what's the lesson here? So to try and prevent similar issues from coming up again in the future.
Absolutely.
I've been lucky enough to work with more good people than bad people throughout the duration of my career. And now I'm, you know, throughout the rest of my life, especially professionally, which I felt like I didn't have control over previously, which was just kind of a weird mindset, not actually the truth. Now that I have my own business and have a different mindset on things, I think I really have full control over ensuring that I'm working with good people that are ecstatic and kind of match up with kind of my guidelines as well.
Very cool. Let's talk a little bit about efficiency. So when we're talking about content marketing, especially, you know, that can be a very like overwhelming task and series of tasks. So, and for businesses, small businesses, especially, efficiency is kind of the key to being successful. You know, a lot of us wear many hats and we can't afford to be distracted by every bright, shiny object that the digital marketing world presents to us. So we have to make some smart decisions to be efficient so we can focus on those important tasks. So I want you to kind of tell us about a time where you made changes to become more efficient. It doesn't necessarily have to be content marketing, but just a story that has to do with efficiency for you that, and what kind of steps that you took to do it.
Sure. I have two good examples. One related to content marketing specifically, and then another one is just kind of time management and email. So the first one being, you know, I do a lot of writing to both add to the discourse in the industry and promote my business and just, you know, chat with other people about what's going on in marketing. And I found in the early days that I would, every time I wanted to go, okay, it's Monday at 2 o'clock, let's write a blog post. And I would sit there and think the whole time about what blog post I should be writing, what topic, you know, what's the goal of this piece. And it was a lot of wasted time, honestly. I found that sitting there trying to brainstorm at time X, Y, or Z wasn't really efficient. So for years now, because of that, I have, and I don't think I'm like the originator of this idea or anything, but this has been really helpful for me, is I created this spreadsheet where I'm constantly just chucking ideas and topics into it all the time. So it's kind of like a bank of ideas. So I'll be in the shower or walking around, I don't know, outside, or with friends talking about, or other fellow marketers talking about things that frustrate us. And I'm always like, ah, that's a great article. Ah, that's a wonderful topic. Or maybe I should explore that article from a different angle. And I'm constantly throwing them in this Google Doc that I can access from desktop or my phone. So I have this whole huge bank of ideas that I'm always working from. So this way, every time I go and sit down and try to write something, whether it's a blog post or another piece of content, I have all the topics there, a couple to choose from, and that kind of eliminates the time investment in that particular, you know, part of the whole process and the brainstorming process. Whereas I'm constantly brainstorming and just, you know, splitting that time up amongst my time doing many other things. And this way when it's time to write, I can just start writing and start focusing and researching on a specific topic.
Cool.
So definitely recommend individuals and businesses kind of working on that. And then something else, I just find myself on the second thing, on the email stuff, I just, I'm kind of trigger happy. I want to make sure that I'm always answering my emails as fast as possible, especially on a client basis, and, you know, making sure to address all the issues that come up. And it makes me feel better to have, you know, inbox zero. I want a clean, it's like my to-do list. I want to make sure that I'm hitting all the benchmarks, but sometimes it's just kind of placebo. It makes me feel like I'm just doing it to feel like I'm accomplishing things. So there's always more things to do in the day than there is time. So I've been using, Google has a new kind of version of Gmail called Inbox, and it has all these really cool features to it. And, you know, it's the new shiny version of Gmail.
It's very different.
It's very different. I don't know if I like it 100%, but the one feature that I love is called Snooze, and it lets me, and this is actually similar to the Gmail, I guess, widget or plugin called Boomerang, where you can just make messages disappear for a while. So what I'll do is if throughout the day, if I get anything that does not need to be answered that day and it's going to affect me getting my three must finish tasks done, I will snooze it till the end of the day or to the following afternoon. And just that way I'm still clearing out my inbox and making myself feel good and not overwhelming myself, but I'm spending less time trying to answer all these random requests and what have you, and just really focused on getting the tasks that need to be done that day done.
It is very easy for people to get overwhelmed by their inbox. And a lot of times folks will just shut down. I mean, they're like, I can't take it. I'm just going to put it to the side. And unfortunately that's when, and I know this from experience, that's when things get crazy and you end up missing the important stuff inside the clutter of everything else that you're not clearing
out. Of course. Yeah, absolutely. There's so many cool opportunities that can come your way via email, and it'd be a shame if you missed it just because you were irritated one day or overwhelmed one day, you know.
Exactly. All right. Well, you know, I love these stories, and learning from each other is what makes us better, and we can take these lessons and turn them into our own successes, right? So I want you to share a story of success with us, one that had the most impact on you personally.
I think just with starting my business and having a constant flow of clients initially, I feel a lot of joy and, you know, that I have achieved something when I first started Diamond Media. You know, I had some requests through the articles that I was writing for people to, you know, freelance writing projects and consulting, but not enough to sustain myself or create a business that I can help, you know, hire other people, anything close to that. I only had a few projects once I decided to quit Echo. So in the beginning, it was kind of scary, to be honest. I mean, I knew it's what I wanted to do, and I knew I could do it. I knew I had it in me, but that didn't make it any easier. I felt like I was just going to sit in front of my computer at home for 10 hours a day and not really achieve anything. But what I did do was really let it be known what I was focusing on. So I made sure to update all my profiles. I spent money on creating a website that really articulated what my business was, you know, offering. You know, because if you don't let people know, then they don't know that you're offering those kind of services. And that seems like a very basic thing, but you'd be surprised how many consultants and freelancers and first-time entrepreneurs and business owners don't update all their profiles that they're using to make it very clear what they're doing now. Right. So that was one thing that really helped. I had a couple people already in my network kind of reach out and say, oh, hey, we actually need help with building out a content marketing plan. I'd love to chat with you and see if this is a match, just from updating all my stuff, updating the bios on the publications that I've written for, updating my bio on Medium or Twitter and LinkedIn and all that kind of stuff, and really articulating what I'm trying to offer. And I guess that comes back to understanding what your goals are for your business and your focus, which is also kind of difficult to find. And then in the beginning, I also did a lot of prospecting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, reaching out, you know, and I think, you know, in the age of inbound marketing and content marketing and all that kind of wonderful stuff where you drive leads to come to you, and that's kind of, well, what I have going on today, I would say 90% of my business comes to me. But in the beginning, that was not the case. And I felt like kind of almost, you know, dirty or doing the wrong thing or bad by reaching out and cold calling, basically. And I was doing it via email. I didn't really make any calls personally, which, yeah, I just didn't feel comfortable doing the call thing. But I would reach out to companies that I was excited to potentially work with. I think I could really provide value. They were already doing something interesting in, you know, with marketing, and I knew I could add additional value. So I would, you know, do research, find the people on LinkedIn that worked at, you know, that managed content or managed marketing, what have you. And I would tailor a message to them either on LinkedIn or via email, you know, hi, this is who I am. These are the services I'm offering. Be interested in getting on a call, or you just keep me in mind if you do need the services down the line. Now, I didn't connect with them and then immediately shoot them a message. Yeah, I want to make that clear.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a little bit more detail work behind it, in the sense that I kind of got to follow these people for a little bit and see what type of content they're putting out there, if they'd actually be a match or not, personalized it, and kept in contact with them. So that there was a couple touch points and not just, you know, the stuff that I was talking about earlier that was really irritating when someone connects with you on LinkedIn and they just send you this, you know, template message about something they're trying to sell you. I really tried to find the right people, the right message to use, personalize it. And I was scared to do the kind of cold outreach, but it wasn't cold. It was warm. It was targeted. I actually like took the time to do it right. And that's what helped me land a lot of my first initial business. And from that momentum of working with the first couple clients, it really just helped the business continue to grow. And now through both referrals and inbound leads, I don't really have to do much of that anymore, which is quite wonderful. And I'm proud of that. I'm happy that I was able to, you know, build something that didn't exist before and try to help companies better succeed with marketing.
Excellent. I love it. It's a great story. Yep. So I like to leave everybody with a couple little tidbits that are easy to take away, something that they can take action on or look into real quick. So a couple of quick questions, elaborate on any of them as you see the need. If you could only use three social media platforms, which ones would you choose?
Easy. LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. LinkedIn for the kind of business potential and the community there that's really focused on offering discussion around professional topics. Twitter for the ability to do a lot of the similar things like LinkedIn, like talking with other experts in your field, but you have a more one-to-one connection with them. Whereas I feel like LinkedIn, it's kind of all, you have to do it kind of privately. I don't feel like conversations are very public, obviously. And then Facebook, because it's Facebook, it is the, everyone is on it. It is a great way to stay connected with people, both personally and professionally. And I find that when I'm sharing content from kind of a professional standpoint, that's where I'm able to stand out as well. You know, I use a Facebook page for my business, but I also just use my personal profile to share what I'm writing or what the team's writing or, you know, content of others. And I find that that's where I'm able to really engage a lot of people in my network since, you know, we're connected on there as well. So I definitely think those three are the most efficient for me.
All right. What is your favorite time-saving tool that you wouldn't want to live without?
I think Sunrise is wonderful. Sunrise is a calendar app, I believe just bought by Microsoft, so I hope they don't ruin it. But it's wonderful. I was having a lot of issues in the past syncing events in my Gmail calendar on my Google calendar on desktop with what's happening on my mobile phone. And now it's one really easy to use, concise experience that saves a lot of time. I add an event, it's on my phone, we're all set to go. I can add an event right on my phone. Super easy, super user-friendly, meant for mobile. Yeah, I could be meeting with someone and we can set another meeting. And it's right there on my calendar on desktop, all synced in one concise calendar, which saves a lot of time for me.
Cool. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for everybody to go check out. All right. What one book would you recommend for everybody?
I would recommend Stand Out. It's a book by my dear friend, Dori Clark. It was just published, I believe, on the 21st of April.
Right.
The full title of the book is Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. And it's basically a really wonderful guide to how to become a thought leader in your industry and stand out in what you're doing. And so that throughout your career, you have an, kind of an added protection that makes you a value to, you know, potential clients or, you know, potential employers. So I just did an interview with Dory on my blog. I guess we can put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a great book. Easy read.
Yeah, Dory's awesome. I definitely would say hear, hear to that one. All right, Brian, thank you so much for your time today. If you would, I'm going to ask you, put you on the spot one last time to leave us with a parting thought, a piece of advice or something to inspire the listeners.
This is kind of building off ideas kind of brought up in Dory's book and since I read it recently and kind of ideas of the ideas around what's worked for me in my career is that you really shouldn't be afraid to put your ideas out there, whether you personally as a professional or at, on behalf of your business. You have great ideas that need to get out there and be heard. And you just got to find the right way to package them so that the intended audience has an opportunity to see them. So I would say that one of the biggest reasons people don't succeed with content marketing or kind of building their own reputation throughout their careers because they're afraid to start that podcast, to start blogging, to be active on Twitter because they don't think, you know, for many reasons that their opinions are valid enough. And that's just not the case. I recommend without a doubt that anyone should put their ideas out there and add to the discourse in their industry to ensure that they kind of have a lasting impact.
Excellent. You know, and that reminds me very much of a piece of advice I gave when I was giving a speech over to the local college of business and at the university here. And I was talking about personal branding and how it was important for the students to start building their own personal brand. One of the students said, I'm into the interior design field. And, you know, I don't have any experience. Why would anybody want to listen to me? And it's very simple that you have opinions, you have taste. Get it out there, whether it's right or wrong. Start putting something out there. Somebody's going to listen to it and enjoy it.
Absolutely. You have to make that experience.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not going to, none of this is going to come to you. No, you know, Forbes isn't going to knock on your door and say, please write for us. No one's going to show up at your door. No one showed up at your door with a podcast kit and said, start, right? You have to go and do it and make that experience for yourself. So,
all right, Brian, tell us a couple of ways how we can connect with you online.
Sure. So you can just check me out on my website. That's brianhonigman.com. I blog almost every week. You can also sign up for my newsletter. It's also just found under the newsletter page on my site. I send out an email most Tuesdays about the stuff that I'm writing, the team's writing, and also just kind of curating book recommendations and other great articles about marketing and business from across the web. And then lastly, I'm really active on Twitter, so definitely feel free to say hi after this interview. And that's just at Brian Honigman on Twitter. And Honigman spelled H-O-N-I-G-M-A-N, but I'm sure all this can be found in the show notes of the interview.
Absolutely. Brian, thanks again for your time today, man. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And we're going to say goodbye to everyone who's still watching on Periscope. Thanks for hanging out. You who hung out for the entire time. That's awesome.
Amazing. Thanks so much for listening.
Your assignment this week is to stop. Take some time to evaluate your content marketing and make sure you're attacking it with a plan and being as efficient about it as possible. Brian gave us a ton of great information today, which I've summarized in the show notes at bjsmith.co/23. Make a plan, be consistent, and most of all, be patient. I know that I'll be focusing my time on that this week as well. Come share your thoughts about all this content marketing stuff on the new Marketing Group Therapy Facebook group. Come join the family. You can get there by going to bjsmith.co/Facebook group. All one word, and it'll take you right to it. This is a closed group, so you'll need to request access. It's just a little bit of protection to keep out the trolls and keep the good conversations going. Tell us what you're going through, how we can help. Tell us about all your wins and share any advice you have. I'm looking forward to interacting with you there. The Marketing Group Therapy Podcast is produced by me, BJ Smith. You can connect with me on Twitter at BJ Smith Strategy, Facebook/TheBJSmith, or drop me an email, bj@thebusymarketer.com. You can find more information about today's show, including Brian's contact information, by visiting bjsmith.co/23. If you like what you heard today, I would appreciate you leaving a rating and review in iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. We need stars and written reviews so that more listeners like you can find the podcast. You can find links to leave a review at bjsmith.co/review. Thanks again for all the love and support. Until next time, remember to focus on the important tasks and have a productive week.